Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Ted Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing simanim. These are indications that show us that the animal is still alive. In situations where we have a misukenet, we need to ensure that the animal stays alive through the shechita, and therefore we need certain indications of life that tell us that the animal didn't die from natural causes before the shechita was complete. So we had a number of other simanim that weren't found in the Mishnah that were given to us by Rav, or Talmidei Rav, and then Shmuel's response to the Talmidim of Rav, the Balei HaTosafot said that that was akin to the Machloket of the Tanaim in the Mishnah, and that Rav was following the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel or Rabban Gamliel, that they require a higher threshold of Pirkus in order for it to be a Siman Chaim, and that Shmuel was following the Shita of the Chachamim that had a lower standard, although the Ramban suggests that even Rav was following the Shita of the Chachamim, but it's based on the Braita that we're about to see, which the Gemara challenges from, which is Meitave Rabbi Yossi Omer, Haya Rabbi Meir Omer. So Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Meir used to say, Go'a b'shat shechita, ein ze pirkus. If you have that sound that comes out of the animal at the time of shechita, that's not considered to be a sign of life. Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi, so that's his son, Omer Mishmo, says in his name, Rashi says in his name means the name of Rabbi Yossi. He's saying over from his father, Afilu heitila rei, bikish kisha bizanba, even if it defecates, or it waves its tail, wags its tail, ain't ze pirkus. That's also not pirkus. The Gemara says, kasha goa, agoa, kasha rei, arei. So both of these present, all of these present a problem for Rav's statement, or the Talmidei of Rav's statement. Here we have a Tanaic work which seems to oppose their view. Now, if the Tosafot was right, then it may not have been such a big question because of the fact that they were holding like the position of Rabban Gamliel or Shimon ben Gamliel. But that would then mean that these statements are acquiring even a higher threshold than that. So that would even put these Tanaim in a category that's above any of the categories we have in our Mishnah. But if it's like what the Ramban suggests over here, that this is all within the sheet of the Chachamim, then it presents a problem for Rav's statement, which is Rav giving us thresholds, which supposedly are under the rubric of the Rabbanon, and here we have Rabbi Yossi telling us that that's not the case. None of these work. So the Gemara says that we have a kasha of goa goa, which is the noise that the animal makes at the point of shechita, and the rei rei, the defecation. So goa goa lo kasha, that's not a problem. Hada avikola, Adami kola, depends on the thickness and the robustness of the voice or the sound that happens at the time of the shechita. So if you have a deep-throated, robust type of sound that comes out that shows a sign of strength, that is considered to be a siman pirkus, a siman of chiyut in the animal. On the other hand, if it is ami, as Rashi says, keha mitargamina and amya, means a weak, a light voice. So if it's just a little moan, that's not considered to be a sign of life. That's an exiting of the life of the animal, not a siman that they're still strong and robust at the time that the shechita is being done. Rei arei nami lo kasha. Similarly with defecating, kan bishotetet, kan bimatrezet. Has to do with the force at which it's released from the body. The body loses control over the muscles, and therefore the animal will release whatever it's holding in, whether it's urine or if it's soa. It will release it just because it's dying, and it doesn't have the muscle power to hold it in anymore. But then that would just come out, drip out, fall out slowly. But if it was still full of life and vigor, then when it empties itself out, it does it with force. It does it with strength. And so that would be the difference, meaning that how do you see the animal defecating over here? Is it just dripping out, just falling out? Or something where they're doing in their normal fashion, which is indicative of a sign of life, that it's still alive at that point in time? That would be the distinction between these different statements. The one thing that's interesting here is that the Gemara never mentions kishkasha b'zanva, which was as opposed to kishkasha b'ozna. And so seemingly that would be that they agreed that the waving of the tail is not sufficient, whereas the waving of the ear is a sufficient indication. A tail happens naturally. It's something that the animal does anyway, and so it's not a sign of life. Moving the ear is a significant siman. That's not something that the animal normally engages in, and therefore that would be a sign of life. But then that would present the problem for the Rabbanon and the Mishnah, who did say that kishkasha b'zanva was a sufficient sign of pirkus, and then this couldn't be like the shita of the Chachamim, which may be what pushed Tosafot in the direction of saying that this is not necessarily following the shita of the Chachamim. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chisda, Pirkus Shamru Bisof Shechita. This Pirkus that we're looking for has to be at the end of Shechita. Mai Bisof Shechita. What does it mean at the end of Shechita? Be'emtza Shechita. It means in the middle of the Shechita. La'afuke Tchilat Shechita Adolo. That comes to exclude a case where it happens in the beginning of the Shechita. So Sof Shechita is a relative term. Doesn't mean literally the end of the Shechita. It means relative to the beginning, it's the Sof Shechita. So it's anything that's not at the beginning of the Shechita, that is sufficient indication of a sign of life. Amar Rav Chisda, Mina Aminala. How can I prove that to you? The Tanan, our Mishnah says, Behema Daka, Shepashta Yada, Velo Yechzira. If you have a light animal that extends its forearm, Lo Yechzira, it does not retract it, Psula, it doesn't work, it's Pasul. Eimat, when did this action happen? Ilema b'sof shchita, if it hadn't been all the way at the end of shchita, kohechei techei v'tezel, how long do you want the animal to live? How much life do you need in this animal? It's being killed. That's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to die at this point. How much longer do you want it to hold on to its life over here? Elalav must be be'emsa shchita, that it happened in the middle of the shchita. Rashi says that sof shchita, he mentions it a number of times in his perush over here. Sof Shechita is after Shechita. It doesn't mean at the end of the Shechita. It means a moment after Shechita. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam says over here, Im lo tzia nafsha ad sof Shechita. Rabbeinu Tam says it's at the tail end of the Shechita. As you're finishing the two simanim, that's when we would expect this siman. So Rashi says it happens a moment after the Shechita. And Rabbeinu Tam says it is right at the end of the Shechita, that's when it happens. That's just a nuanced difference, but important difference, because here these things are what determine whether the animal was alive or not. Rashi says that when you say Sof Shechita, and we'll see later on, Rabba has a position Sof Shechita, means the moment after Shechita. And for Rabbeinu Tam, it literally means the Sof HaShechita, the end of the Shechita. Now, what Rashi says over here is, Kohechi Teche V'Tezel, how much life force do you want it to show? The question from the Mishnah is that the extension of the leg isn't seen as a sign of viability or a sign of life. And therefore, when it stings its arm, we just say that it was part of the death throes. It wasn't something that indicated life. But Rashi says then, the Gemara's question is, if it extends its arm after Shechita, what else can you expect from it? What else do you want it to do in order to indicate that it was alive? That type of movement is significant. You're right, not in the death throes, but if it's already post the Shechita, then that's something that's significant in of itself, and that's enough of a sign of life. That's the way that Rashi reads it. The Baal Tosafot, quoting the Rabbeinu Tam, says, from the statement in the Mishnah that says that the movement of the leg in that direction is a sign of death throes, if it actually dies at that point, then it's done what it's needed to do, which is it got to the point at the end of Shechita. So even if that is a sign of death throes, that's exactly what you need. You need it to die. And now it's showing you that it's dying at this point, which is a point that is totally fine to die at. So that's the way that the Rabbeinu Tam says it. Again, that's within his Shita, that it's really literally at the Sof Shechita. Rashi says it means after Shechita, and therefore he says the fact that it did something post Shechita, what else would you like it to do at this point? How much life do you want in this animal post the Shechita? The extension of the forearm should be sufficient evidence of the fact that it made it through the Shechita. Amar Rava, the old on Besof Shechita. He says that it's only at the end of Shechita. So he argues on Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda is saying that it means Emsa Shechita. Rava is saying it means Besof Shechita. She'ani Omer, Ko She'enu Ose Kein Besof Shechita. Anything that does not do this at the tail end of the Shechita, Bi'adua She'nishmata Nitula Hemenu Kodem Lechein. That is evidence of the fact that its life force left it before that point in time. Nachman b'Yitzchak Amar Pirkus Shamru b'tchilat Shechita. So here's a three-way machloket over here. Rav Nachman b'Yitzchak's position is that you can even have a sign at the beginning of Shechita. Now it's clear here whether you hold like Rav Chisda, Rava, or Rav Nachman b'Yitzchak, they need the animal to be alive throughout the Shechita. Nobody thinks that the animal can die halfway through the Shechita, and that's okay. The only question is whether the siman that is given is an indication of life beyond the point of the siman. For Rava, that is the moment you need the determination. The Pirkus is at Sof Shechita, that's when you need the animal alive, you need the siman there. For Rav Chisda, who says in the middle, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says in the beginning, they suggest that Pirkus at the beginning of the Shechita, or in the middle of the Shechita, is an indication that the animal has enough life force to make it through the remainder of the Shechita. Doesn't mean that they're dead after that. It means that if you show that much vigor at the beginning of the Shechita, you're going to make it to the end of the Shechita. Or if you show that much vigor in the middle of the Shechita, you will make it to the end of the Shechita. So the machloket is, when do you need a siman of life to tell us that there is life force at the end of the Shechita? That would be the nature of their machloket. You could argue that the question here is about how much life force you need in the animal at the Sof HaShechita. If you hold like maybe Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, you obviously have a declining line of life force, which is that he showed Pirkus at the beginning of the Shechita, and then that's going to decline to the end of the Shechita. But maybe for Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, that's sufficient. As long as it has some semblance of life in it at the end of the Shechita, then that's enough. Whereas Rava, who says it has to be at the Sof HaShechita, might say you need the full life or the full viability at that moment of the end of the Shechita. It can't be a declining line of life force. That might be another way to describe their machloket over here, that they are actually arguing about how much life force you need in. Basically, we saw yesterday, Vizot HaChaya, that the animal has to be alive, it has to have vigor, it has to have life force, the sustainability of the animal, in order for the Shechita to be a good Shechita. The question is, does that mean at the beginning of Shechita you need that, or even at the tail end of the Shechita you need that much life force in the animal? So that would be a more fundamental machloket between them. First way we explained it is just simply, when does the siman indicate that there is life in the animal? And they're arguing just about the simanim, not about the fact that the life force, whatever it is similar at the end of the Shechita, according to all of them. How can I show you that I'm right, that in the beginning of the Shechita, Pirkus is a sufficient sign of life? It's none. Our Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Shimon, Hashochet Balayla, Unamachar Matzak Talim Mleim Dam, Kshera. If you sheft at night, in a case where it's Bidi Abad, because you were doing it at night, and nevertheless, it was a Mesukenet, and we don't know if it made it through the Shechita, then you look the next morning, and you see where the blood distributed on the walls. If you could see it on the wall, Shezinka, if it was forced out or thrust out of the animal, then it's kasher kemidat Rabbi Eliezer. Like Rabbi Eliezer said, that zinuk is a sign of life. And so within that sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon says that if you wake up in the morning, you can see that evidence, then that would be a good enough indication that the animal was alive. Amar Shmuel, we mentioned this when we did the Mishnah, that Shmuel qualifies this and says that it's not kutle abayit, but rather kutle beit shchita shaninu. Does not mean the walls of the house. Means the walls of the area where you shecht it, around there. Now, Iyamart Bishlama Betchilat Shechita Shapir. If you say that you need that evidence at the beginning of the Shechita, that's fine. El Iyamart Besof Shechita Lichush Dilma Betchilat Shechita Zinka. Let us say that only at the beginning of Shechita it took place. So the Gemara here has 2 points. One is which is the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that Rabbi Shimon believes that Zinuk, with Rabbi Eliezer, is a siman of life. And number 2 is that after the fact, you can go and look and find the information from the Zinuk. Implied in the Gemara over here is Shmuel somehow changes that dynamic. The fact that Shmuel says that it has to do with the Kotlei Beit HaShechita and not Kotlei Abayit changes the fact that you could have, if it was the Kotlei Abayit, determined when it happened, versus if it happened on Kotlei Beit HaShechita, that you wouldn't be able to determine that it happened. Many Rishonim point out that they don't think Shmuel was necessary over here, because even without Shmuel, how would you ever know, even if it was Kotlei Abayit, when that happened during the process of Shechita? And so therefore, they say Shmuel is brought here just to give the qualification that Shmuel gives, since we're on the topic. But it's not essential to the question or to the point that Rav Nachman Yirbe Yitzchak makes. Nachman Yitzchak makes just the simple point that you can't determine after the fact whether it happened at the beginning, middle, or end of Shechita. So there you have to assume that it happened at the beginning of Shechita. If it could have happened at the beginning of Shechita, that by definition that means that the beginning of Shechita is sufficient to show a sign of life. That's how many of the Rishonim learn. We're going to see in a second that Rava is going to disagree with that, and we'll see for a number of reasons why you could disagree with this conclusion. But the other Rishonim, the Rashba, the Rosh, both of them discuss over here situations in which the animal was moved around or something happened to the animal while you were shechting it. And so those ukimto make it possible for you to determine when during the Shechita process the blood came out if you were talking about the walls of the house. But if you're talking about the Beit HaShechita, then you would no longer be able to determine that because moving the animal around wouldn't give you that information. That's how some of the Rishonim who think that Shmuel is essential to the question deal with it. They create ukimto on it. The most interesting is Rashi's view over here. There are some who suggest that it's not really Rashi. It was added into Rashi afterwards. You can see that in the Shita Mikubetzet, where he says Mitevat v'amar Shmuel does not belong in Rashi. El Gilyon miperushei Achronim hu. It's an extra piece from the Achronim v'ichnisu beperush Rashi zal, and they put it into the Shita of Rashi. Ubishlosha perushei Rashi zal shebidei lo nimtza. Says I have three copies of Rashi in my hand, and none of them have this explanation in there. When you read it, you say, this does not sound like Rashi at all, but it is something that was added in. And in this version of what we have in Rashi, he says that, de'ihava kotolim mahmash, if it really was walls, lemachar anu yocholim lavin, we could intuit when that happened. Ihava zinuk, hava betchilat shchita, o be'emsa shchita. We'd be able to determine when the zinuk happened. De'ihava betchilat shchita, im yimatzea zinuk, Lamala Bakotel. If it was a zinuk that happened at the beginning of Shkita, it'd be way high up on the wall. The Machmar Koach Vichyut Shaya Dain Babayma Zinkala Merachol. Because at that point, the animal still has a lot of strength in it. It's going to shoot it further, higher up on the wall, further away. Imatzeha Zinuk Lamata Bakotel. If it's lower down on the wall, be a Duash Bemsa Shkita Zinka. Then you can determine that it was in the middle of the Shkita that happened. Shalei HaBakoach, Kolkach L'Zaneka Dam L'Rachok, of Ahashta. Now that you have Shmuel saying that it's the Beit HaShkita, you no longer have an ability to make that discerning judgment about it. The Rashi, or what is attributed to Rashi over here, says that Shmuel's integral to this statement or this proof of Rav Nachman Yitzchok. He says, had it been the walls of the house, where on the wall would tell you when during the Shkita it happened. Pretty amazing, because it really has to do a lot with directional, the way that the head was facing at that time. Has to do with when the blood started to come out. I mean, it doesn't necessarily pump right away, which we're going to see in the Baal HaTosfot in a second. And so, it's not exactly a definitive proof if you find the blood somewhere on the wall, higher or lower, as to when during the Shkita that took place. But nevertheless, that's attributed to Rashi here, and that says that Shmuel is integral. That is proof that it must be that Tchilat HaShkita is sufficient grounds over here for that. So the Gemara says, V'dilma shiny zinuk da'adif. Maybe zinuk is different because it's a much stronger and definitive sign of life. I mean, that the other simanim that we're giving are good, but zinuk is the ultimate sign of life because it shows that the organs are still intact and working at that point. The animal dies, that means that the organs have shut down. So then when you check the animal, you would not expect to see a zinuk. On the other hand, if the animal dies because of the shchita, that means that the organs were still pumping at that time, and then the zinuk coming out is a good sign of life that its organs were still intact at the time of the shchita. So then Gemara says, Umi Odif, is it really such a good sign? Because if you think about the structure of our Mishnah, in the Mishnah you have the Shita of Rabban Gamliel, or Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, then you have Rabbi Eliezer, and then you have the Chachamim. So now the position of Zinuk is Rabbi Eliezer's position, which is found in the middle of the Mishnah. And you're telling me now that his position is the strongest sign of life. Maybe that even everybody else would agree to it. Or that maybe that can be done at the beginning of Shkita and it would be a sign of life, versus the others that would only be a sign of life at later on in the Shkita. This is exceptional, is what we're saying here. And how could you say that? Perhaps not. The way the Mishnah is structured, it says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Daya im Zinka. So he is responding to Rabban Gamliel, or Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who made something, and he's saying, Daya, it's enough. So he is definitely lowering the threshold from that which Rabban Gamliel said. Kal midraban Gamliel ve'adif midrabanan. His statement, or where he is, first of all, situated in the Mishnah, as well as the language that he uses, makes it clear that he is a threshold that is lower than that of Rabban Gamliel. He's saying, daya, it's enough. Which means that whatever was before that said by Rabban Gamliel is even a stronger sign of life, even a greater sign of life. And he's saying, oh, it's enough if you do zinu. That's number one. Number two is in his position in the Mishnah, he is then something that is a lower threshold than Rabban Gamliel, and a higher threshold than the Rabbanan. In that case as well, that means that the Rabbanan's position are looking for signs that are even lower than that. So maybe there you could argue it, but against Rabban Gamliel, you can't argue that. Amar Lina, Amar Li Sama Bar Chilkai, Akshi Ba'abua Debara Buvram. We have a now Msora of individuals that do not appear in the places in Shas, which is that we have from Sama Bar Chilkai, Akshi Ba. Someone had a difficulty about this, and that was Avua Debaro Vuram. The question is, Debar Abuvram, is that his proper name? His name was Bar Abuvram. And then we're speaking about the father of Bar Abuvram. Or does Bar Abuvram mean the son of Abuvram? And that's what Rashi says, it means the son of. But that means then, Avua Debar Abuvram means it was Abuvram, the father of the son of Abuvram. He's speaking about Abuvram himself. So Rashi notes this. We have this in other places in Shas. We've noted it before. It's because the son was more well known than the father. So they call the father by the name of the son. What's so ironic over here is that the son himself wasn't known by his own name. The son was known as Abar Abuvram, but he was more well known, and then they say his father. They could have said Abuvram, but they're referencing it to the son because the son was somebody who was more well known, even though the son's name itself was only based on his father's name. He was Bar Abuvram. Alright, it's just an interesting note about this. And some say it was the brother of the son of Abuvram, or meaning the other child of Abuvram. Umid Rabbanan mi adif. Is it really true that it's better than the Rabbanan? Is Zinuk really at a higher level than what the Rabbanan say later on the Mishnah? Perhaps not. Mishnah ends, v'chamim omrim, ad shetipar kes, obiyad, oberegel. It says, ad, until you do this. Rabbanan, ahai, kaimu. On which part of the Mishnah are they referencing back to? Ilema de Rabban Gamliel. If they're referencing back to Rabbi Gamliel, kevin shepirkasa mi ba'ile. They should have just said, kevin de pirkasa, that's enough. Ela pshita ad Rabbi Eliezer. It's clear that they're referencing to Rabbi Eliezer. Bi adif. And if his qualification or threshold is better, my ad. What do you mean ad? Ad means until you do this. Until you do this seems to be a higher threshold than you had before. So that would indicate that it's just the opposite of what you thought. You thought Rabbi Eliezer had the strongest siman. The way that the Mishnah lays out, he's either in the middle, or according to this Masorah, he's the lowest. Because he says about the statement of Rabban Gamliel that came before him, that you don't need that much. It's enough with Zinuk. And then the Chachamim responding to him say, ah, it's got to be until, which means above what you said. It's got to be something above that. And again, they can't be referencing back to Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel has a higher standard. To say ad against Rabban Gamliel's position doesn't make sense. It should just said, came into Pirkusa. The sense it did a Pirkus, that's enough. So it can't be that they're referencing back to Rabban Gamliel. That would tell us that that's not a sufficient answer, or that is not the way to deal with the problem. In that way, or that manner, it shows you that Zinuk is something that could be only determined at the beginning of the Shechita. And given that, it shows you that Simanim at the beginning of Shechita are sufficient. It's not because Zinuk is unusual. It's not because it's a stronger sign of life. It's simply that Simanim or Pirkus only needs to be shown or demonstrated at the beginning of Shechita. And that's Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's proof. Rav Amar, Pirkus Shamru B'Sof Shechita. Rav has the most stringent opinion over here, most Kamor opinion, which is that it's not considered to be Pirkus until you reach the end of Shechita. Again, for Rashi, as always, he says Sof Shechita means Sof Mamash, Shetiberkes B'Gmar Shechita, that it does it, to have a bakhtiyut achar ha-shechita, that has life force after the shechita. This is Rashi, the shechitato all the way along. Sof shechita means it has to demonstrate life and has to live a moment after the shechita is over. So it has to demonstrate through the end of the shechita that it has life force to indicate that there is a moment of life after the shechita. Versus, again, the Rabbeinu Tam who thinks that just getting to the sof shechita is enough. So mina min Allah. So Rava says, how can I prove to you that that's the case? Titania. Because I have a brayta that he's about to bring, which will indicate that it must be at the Sof Shechita. It's really from a different world or a different issue, which we'll see in 1 second. Now, Rava, who disagrees over here, what does he do with the question of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak? Rav Nachman Yitzchak's question from the issue of Zinuk in the Mishnah is a significant question. He has a really good point. How is Rava going to deal or respond to that? The Bali Tosafot suggests over here, V'hadalo chashinan dimo b'tchilat shechita zinek. How do I know that it didn't happen at the beginning of shechita, like Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says about zinuk? How does Rava deal with that? Mishum dalo shechicha sheyaz zinuk ela b'sof. So this is Tosafot putting out in reality what happens when you sheft the animal. And we discussed this 2 daf ago when we discussed the Dam HaNefesh and Dam Chalalim. Over there, both Rashi and Tosafot discussed when it reaches Dam Chalalim and when the Zinuk happens, that there is a flow of blood in the beginning of the Shechita, which is a soft or slow bleeding type of cut that happens in the beginning. Then there's Kiluach, and then there's the Dam Chalalim that comes afterward. So actually 3 stages of Dam along the way, and the initial stage does not have Zinuk in it. And therefore, the Bali Tosafot is suggesting over here, that's Rava's point. That shotate, that blood that comes out in a slow manner in the beginning, is the beginning of the Shechita. The Zinuk doesn't happen till later. And then there's, after the Zinuk, there's small blood flow afterwards, which is the Dam Chalalim. But you see from that Zinuk is not expected to come at the beginning of the Shechita, that it might come at the end of the Shechita. That's the way that the Balei HaTosafot deal with it. Others suggest that the position of Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah says, Kimidat Rabbi Eliezer, I'm following within the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. What we do know is that Rabbi Shimon's view in the Mishnah follows that of Rabbi Eliezer. The question is, does Rabbi Eliezer agree with Rabbi Shimon? And that might be the issue over here, which is that Rabbi Shimon is saying this within Rabbi Eliezer, but Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't have agreed with this. According to Rabbi Eliezer, that would not be the case, and therefore, he just doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon, because he thinks that Rabbi Eliezer said Zinuk, and Zinuk means Zinuk Pesof Shechita, and not what Rabbi Shimon is saying in the Mishnah. And Rabbi Shimon is actually a fourth opinion in the Mishnah, and Rava says we don't hold like that Shita of Rabbi Shimon. He said it within Rabbi Eliezer, but Rabbi Eliezer himself did not hold of that Shita. The other way to say it is the way that the Gemara rejected over here, but it's to suggest that Zinuk is unusual, that Zinuk is a super sign of life. And what Rava will say is that he dismisses Zinuk because Zinuk in the beginning of the Shechita is the equivalent of any other Siman at the end of the Shechita. Those are three different ways that Rava could argue here on this position of Rav Nachum Yitzchok, of course, and Rav Chisda as well, but disprove or undermine that proof that they brought from the issue of Zinuk. Now, Rava's proof is from a Braita, the Tanya. So it's a Braita that's quoting a Pasuk in Parshat Emor with regards to an animal, which we know from the laning on Yom Tov, which is Ve'edaber Hashem el Moshe l'emor, Shor, O Kesef, O Eiz, Ki Yivaleid, Vayash Shivat Yamim Tachat Imo. It has to be there for 7 days under the wing of its mother, it sounds like. U'miyom HaShmini V'Halo, from the 8th day on, Yiratzeh L'Kurban Yishe L'Hashem. Then it will be okay to be used as a Korban. This is what's called Mechuser Zman. An animal that is not 8 days old is not allowed to be brought as a Korban, is not allowed to be brought on the Mizbeach. There is a requisite waiting time of 8 days until you can put it on the Mizbeach. The Gemara brings here a limud from this. O Kesef, the O-O is what Rashi says that they are darshaning over here. The Or, which are Miutim. O Kesef, Prat L'Kilayim. It has to be a sheep. It cannot be something that is a mixed breed, as Rashi says over here, a product of a goat and a sheep that gave you a mixed breed. That's not allowed. O-Eis is Prat L'Nidmeh. That comes to exclude the case of Nidmeh. Nidmeh is an animal that's born not as a mixed breed, but looks like another breed. It's an animal that's born, say, to a ewe and a sheep, and the other end, it looks like a goat. So that's what's called a Nidmeh. That's also excluded. Kivaleid. Kivaleid means it was born through the birth canal. Prat L'Yotze Dofen. That comes to exclude a case of a cesarean section, where it was taken out of the animal, not through the birthing canal. So that's Shivat Yamim. That's 7 days. Prat L'Mechuser Zman. That excludes your ability to bring it within those 7 days, meaning that if it's less than 7 days, it cannot be brought in the Mizbeach. Tachat Imo says Prat L'Yatom, that you can't bring an orphan as a korban on the Mizbeach. So here you have four different qualifications that disqualify the animal from being put on the Mizbeach. Kilayim Nidmeh, too young, and then an orphan. The Gemara is here going to discuss orphan Yatom, which is a strange terminology within the world of animals. And what exactly makes an animal into a Yatom that then would disqualify it from going on the Mizbeach? Tosafot over here just mentions, he mentions it here in other places in Shas as well, which is that the Gemara over here uses O as a miut, yet in other places it uses O as a riboy. So how do you know when O is a miut? How do you know when O is a riboy? He says context is what matters. In the Pasuk is telling you what is good. Therefore, O is going to tell you what is disqualified. It's going to tell you what is a miut. On the other hand, if the Pasuk was telling you what's no good, then the O is going to be a riboy to let things in. So he says it has to be contextual. V'hacha, kesef ve'eiz k'tiv, sh'ata yochol adzi kilayim mibneihem, u'memeli drabu l'hachi, k'tiv o l'ma'et. Because it writes kesef and eiz, you would have thought that a kesef eiz, or a kesef and eiz, which is kilayim, should have been okay. So your natural inclination in the pasuk would be to be merabit things that are there. So therefore the O comes to dispel that and make it into a miut. But if your natural inclination would be to be ma'et, then O would work as a riboy. It's just that it's a contextual type of drasha. And so know that it doesn't mean always O is a riboy or always O is a miut. Now the Gemara says, Hayotom, hey chidami. How exactly does this yotom work? Ilema dilitei mei v'hadar meita. If you said that the mother of this baby gave birth to it and then died, lo'olam teche v'tezel? How long do you want the mother to live? Meaning that there's no requirement here that the mother live as long as the baby's around, and it has ramifications both from a practical standpoint you know, 2 years or 3 years from now, how are you going to know if the mother of this baby was alive? How are you going to bring a korban? That's number one. Number two is, why is there any necessity for the mother to live beyond a certain point? Once the baby is born and there is a mother there, then by definition, that's enough to consider it not a yatom at that time. Rashi also brings a Torat Kohanim that says something interesting. He says that tachat imo. Tachat imo, I translated like under the wing, under the auspices of the mother. But tachat imo, the Torat Kohanim takes literally as replacing the mother. And therefore it's shibat yamim tachat imo, means that the animal could replace its mother, take the stead, or step into the shoes of its mother during the 7 days. Which means that the mother could die during the 7 days, and that would be called tachat imo. So that means that it's clear that the mother dying during that period of time is not a disqualification, because it's still classified as tachat imo, even if the mother dies in the first 7 days. And so that tachat imo tells you that it's possible that the mother will die, and that's not a disqualifying event for the animal. So that can't be the explanation of what yatom is. Ella, demeta, bahadar yilidte. Must be a case where the mother died, and then the birth happened after the mother died. Mi ki valeid nafka. That's excluded because of ki valeid. The way Rashi says it, the only way to get the animal out then is to cut the mother open in order to get the animal out. So then it would be excluded from ki valeid. There would be a different disqualification over here. The way the Rabbeinu Gershom writes it over here is, klomar, v'zeyan mi ki valeid nafka, kaven demeta imei, since the mother died, ein nolad kidarko. That's not a normal way to give birth. Kederech rov ha-noladim. Like the majority of births, the rov noladim b'chaye imam noladim. They are born while their mother is still alive. So he sees kivaleid as an exclusion, not because of the physical realities that you have to open up the mother to get the baby out, but rather the reality of what's normal. It's normal for the mother to be alive. Kivaleid indicates it's got to be a normal birth. A normal birth, the mother's alive. If that's the case, if the mother's dead, then it's not a normal birth. And it's disqualified because of kivaleid for that reason, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom. But either way, that can't be. Ella, pshita, the case must be, ze perish lemita, ze perish lechayim. It happens simultaneously. The mother died as the baby was born. So in that way, you have now what's a yatom, and that yatom will be disqualified from going on the mizbeach. It's past the point of kivaleid, because either according to Rabbeinu Gershom, the mother lived to the end of the birthing process, or according to Rashi, the birth is far enough along that the baby can come out naturally without having to cut the mother open. And that, again, is a machloket as to how far along does the birth have to be in order for that to be classified in that manner. But nevertheless, it would have happened. The birth happens even though the mother passes away, so you don't have to cut the mother open. Now, Tosafot over here makes an interesting point, which is, from this, it would seem like that you could be mitzamtzim, that there's an exact moment. And we have discussed before, and we will discuss again in the Gemara Bechol Rot, the issue of mitzamtzim ba'adam and mitzamtzim b'vishamayim, which is, there exactitude in nature? And is there exactitude when an individual intervenes or interacts with nature? In the end, the Balei Tosafot have a position that mitzamtzim ba'adam is possible. That you as a person can make exact measurements and make something perfect, exactly equal, exactly 50-50. We saw there are other shitot. There's a dissenting opinion within the Balei Tosafot to that. But everybody agrees that b'dei shamayim, in nature, there's no such thing as mitzamtzim, and it's just that we can't figure it out. And that you have twins that are born, they can't be born simultaneously. One came before the other. We just couldn't see it. We couldn't determine. It happened too fast, or it wasn't something that we could measure in exactitude, and therefore it's impossible for us. So tell us what it says over here. It sounds like Zeperish Lemitav, Zeperish Lechayim. It's possible to have something that's Mitzumtzam. It happened exactly. There was a moment in time where one died and one was born. Exact same moment. He says, don't worry about that. He says, because Ika the Meimar, he says that maybe it's possible in this rare instance of Eliyahu, and if he came and told us that it was exactly this way, that the pasuk would be addressing that issue. So yeah, the pasuk addresses that rare recurrence where if Eliyahu and if he came and told us it was mitzumtam, that case is covered by this pasuk. But not to say that it's possible, or not to say that we could ever determine that it happened at the same time. It's not information that we could have gathered, which makes it a very rare instance, and it's interesting that the pasuk is dealing with such a rare instance. But nevertheless, it says that that's excluded because of yatom. So now he says, based on this, iamart bishlama binan chiyuta b'sof leida, to understand when the yatom is not classified as a yatom, according to this, if the mother's alive till the end of the birth, That's what the pasuk came to exclude, that a yatom is not allowed to go on the mizbeach. Eliyah Mart Lobin and Chiyuta Bisof Leida, if you don't require a mother to be alive at the end of the birthing process, Lamale, why do I need a pasuk of yatom with Kivale Nafka? It would have been excluded from Kivale, as we said before, that if the mother already died, the only way to get the baby out is to open up the mother, or according to Rabbeinu Gershom, it's not the normal birth then, because it's being born when the mother's already dead, and then Mikivale would have excluded it. The fact you need a separate issue of yatom to tell you that that baby is no good must be differentiated from the case of Kivalate. The only way to differentiate it from the case of Kivalate is to say that it happened at the Sof Leida. And what it tells you is that whenever we tell you that something has to be alive, it has to reach the end of whatever event is taking place. So just like over here, you have to have the mother alive to the end of the birthing process. So to by Shechita, you need the animal alive to the end of the process. Now again here, Rashi says Sof Leida means a moment after Leida, that it lives a moment after it gives birth, and the Balei Tosfot would say that its life left at the moment of Leida, similar to the way they learned Sof by Shechita, will influence also what they say over here, Sof by Leida. So Rava brings a proof, which is, it's not an exact case, but he says it's a case that's similar enough to indicate to you that when we're looking for life force in any event, we want that life force to be there at the end of the process. And so just like Shechita is a process, and birth is a process, the demand by birth that the mother be alive to the end of that process, so too by Shechita, the demand is that the animal is alive to the end of that process. And the only way to do that is to have a sign of life at that last moment. And that's why he requires Pirkus, the Sof Shechita. So Amar Rava, Hilchata Kiha Matnita. The halacha is like the following braita. Behema Daka. Now you can see here that in the Tosefta, the word Daka does not appear in the Tosefta. And you can see from the coming up in the Braita that we're quoting here from the Tosefta, it makes sense not to have the word Daka here. Which is Behema, Shepashta Yada, Velo Yechzira. It extended its forearm, but did not retract it. Psula. That is problematic. That's what we saw in our Mishnah, which we said that that was a sign of Yitziat Nishama. It's a sign of the life expiring, but it is not an indication of life. Bamed Varim Omrim Biyat. That's only true with the forearm. Aval Beregel, when it comes to the hind leg, Ben Pashta, the low kafufa, whether it extended it and did not retract it. Ben kafufa, if it contracted it, below Pashta, and it did not extend it, Ksheira, that is a sign of life. That's a more significant movement of the animal if it moves its hind leg versus its foreleg. Bameh Dorim Omurim, when is that true? Bedaka, by an animal that's a daka. That's why they don't think that the word daka appears in the beginning, because here the Braita qualifies itself and says, that which we said until now is a reference to daka. Aval Begasa, when it comes to heavier animals, ben bayad, ben berega, whether it's the forearm or the hind leg, ben pashta, velo kafufa, whether it was extended and not retracted, ben kafufa, or it contracted it, velo pashta, and did not extend it, sheira. That's enough of a movement. Ve'of, which we haven't dealt with until now, birds, afilo lo, rafref, ela gapo. Even if it only just twittered its wing, that's enough. Velo kishkesh lazanbo, or it only moved its tail. Obviously, we're talking about birds. There's no tails here that we're talking about. Whenever it had some sort of movement at the hind of the animal, harizepikus. So there's obviously a much lower threshold with regards to birds than there is with regards to behema. What's interesting here is the word rafraif that we use over here. Rashi translates the word batsir mikushkush. Says it's less than even a wagging of a tail or the movement of the tail. It's a very slight movement that you see of the wing or the feathers on the bird, that would be sufficient. Oruch brings be'eno, minyan keheref ayin, that the word rafraif is similar to heref ayin, which means the blink of an eye, which means that you don't even need a movement of a wing, just the blinking of an eye is enough. Or is that a reference, the rafraif means the equivalent of a blinking of an eye, that's what has to happen with the wing. So you just need the slightest movement in order to indicate that there's life over here. So now, my kamash falan. So the question is, Rava's coming along to tell us, oh, the halacha is like this braita. What is he teaching us? Kulo taninu. Our Mishnah gives all this information. All this information could be derived from our Mishnah. And so what's better about the braita than our Mishnah itself? Behema takash, pashta yada, velo yechzira, psula. So that's what we say in our Mishnah, that if it extends its foreleg, that's not enough to be a sign of life. She'ena ela utzat nefesh, because that's just a sign of dying, not a sign of life. Yad in regalo. The Mishnah mentions yad, it says pashta yada, does not mention regel. So you would be medayik from that, that that's true by the foreleg of the animal, it's not true by the hind leg, which is spelled out explicitly in the Braita, in the Tosefta, but our Mishnah has that diuk in it as well. Daka in gasalo. And our Mishnah also makes it clear that we're only speaking about a behema daka, not about a behema gasa. So the Gemara answer is, oh, it's trichalei delotnan. The bird part of the braita, the tosefta, is something that's not mentioned in our Mishnah. And so Rava brought the braita as the halacha because it added in that additional qualification for birds that's not found in our Mishnah. But in Hachanami, the braita is saying exactly what the chachamim say in our Mishnah. And those are the qualifications one would need to ensure that a behema sukene was alive at the time of shechita. Okay, next Mishnah. A shochet le'oved kochavim. Someone who is doing a shechita on behalf of a non-Jew. Shechitato ksheira. That shechita is a good shechita. Rabbi Eliezer posel. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer says it's not a good shechita. And as the Balei Tosafot point out, that when he says pasul over here, he doesn't just mean pasul, he means asur b'hana'ah. That there's a huge problem over here. Because Amar Rabbi Eliezer, afilu shechita, le'chol le'oved kochavim, Michatzar kaved shelah psula. That even if he shechted the whole animal just to give the Oved Kochavim one piece of the animal, a small piece, which is the chatzer kaved shelah. Now, chatzer kaved shelah is translated by different Rishonim in different ways. Rashi over here says that it's a reference to the diaphragm. So if he only shechted the animal just to give the diaphragm to the goy, that would already be enough of a disqualification according to Rabbi Eliezer. Baya Tosafot say, Lav dafka nakat yoteret hakaved. Chatzer hakaved is this equivalent of the Torah's statement of yoteret hakaved, which is the extension, or what he calls one of the lobes of the liver. It's one of the extended or longer lobes of the liver that hangs down. That could be the yoteret hakaved. Tosafot says it's lav dafka he picked chatzer hakaved, or yoteret hakaved, which is one of the items that goes on the mizbeach. It has nothing to do with that. Afilu kezayit basar. If he just shechted it for the goy, so the goy could have a kezayit basar, it's problematic. Psula, again, why? Shistam machshevet oved kochavim le'ovedat kochavim. Because the natural inclination of an oved kochavim is to do anything that he does in honor or towards his avodah zara. If that's the case, this is takrovet avodah zara. It's takrovet avodah zara. It's a sur ba'ana'ah. And that's why Tosafot says psula is lav dafka psula. It means zibchei metim. A sur ba'ana'ah over here. And not simply psula. I'm Rabbi Yossi. Kavachomer hadvarim. There's a kavachomer over here. Uma b'makom shamachshava poselet b'muktashim. By muktashim, machshava has an impact. In a kol oleich elachar ha'oved. There, the only person who can have impactful thoughts is the one who's doing the avoda, the kohen who's doing the korban. He's the one who can make it into pigul. He's the one that can make it into pasul chutz l'mikomo. He's the one that can have a machshava, a thought that is impactful. But the balim, they have no impact in their makshava on the korban. So makom she'im makshava poselet bechulin. In the world of chulin, where makshava is not even a relevant factor, then shouldn't there certainly the person who's doing the shechita should be the determining factor as to what the makshava is associated with this korban? So over here, where the Jew is the shechet, he should be the determining factor, and there should be no question of takrovet avodah zarah over here. Because the Jew shechted it and he had no intent for avodah zarah whatsoever. It doesn't matter what the Balaim are thinking. The Balaim are not impactful, not in Kodesh, and certainly not in Chulin, where Makshava is not even relevant. Again here, the word Makshava, we discussed this in the beginning of Menachot, the Machloket between the Rishonim, but Rashi's clear view over here in many other places is that Makshava means articulation. It does not mean that you thought it. It means that you articulated your thought. The problem is the problematic thought that you articulated. It's a bird that's borrowed from the Torah's term of lo yechashev. And if you do pigol, then lo yechashev, it will not be considered, it's not good. So they use the term machshava in that sense, not as a sense of a thought, but in a sense of articulation. Of course, there are Rishonim that disagree with that. Balei Tosafot favored Rashi's explanation, but there are Rishonim like the Rambam, who seem to think machshava means literally machshava when the Gemara speaks about it. Okay, now, hanei tanei. The Tanaim at the beginning of our Mishnah, Itluhu de Rabbi Lezer be Rabbi Yossi. They are subscribing to Rabbi Lezer be Rabbi Yossi's position. As you can see here, the Balei Tosafot say, Tanae means the Rabbonan and Rabbi Lezer, the Tanakama and Rabbi Lezer, who are the first two opinions in our Mishnah. They are following this position of Rabbi Eliezer be Rabbi Yossi, the Tanya. I'm Rabbi Lezer be Rabbi Yossi, Shamati. I heard, Shabalim mefaglim. That the Balim have the ability to be mefagel a korban. Miu, Tanakama savar isham ine dechashiv in ilolo. The Tanakama says, if we hear him thinking, obviously you can't hear somebody thinking, machshava here means articulation. If we hear the Oved Kochavim articulating that he's doing it le'avodah zarah, then it's problematic. Stam machshevet ukravim lo amrinan. But we do not say that there's a default status that this is the intent of any Ovid Kochavim. If we hear him articulate it, that's fine. Then we know. But if we don't hear him articulate it, we don't assume. Rabbi Eliezer Savar, Avagav Delosham Inei Dechoshiv, even if we don't hear him articulating this, Stam Machshevet Ovid Kochavim, Lavidat Kochavim Amrinan. We do say that the default status of an Ovid Kochavim is to do something, L'shem Avodah Zarah, and obviously that would make it into Takrovet Avodah Zarah. That's the Machloket. So based on this first view of the Machloket over here, the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer both believe that the Baalim do have the ability to make impact. Now the fact that they do have ability after impact, like Rabbi Yossi states over here, has to derive from the world of Kodesh. There's no such thing as Machshava in the world of Chulin. We need some sort of paradigm. And we know that the Avodah Zarah is paralleled with Kodesh, Zivchei Meitim. It has something that is structured like Kodesh. And so therefore, you have to have a paradigm in Kodesh where the Baalim could impact to say that by Avodah Zarah, they would also impact. And that's what the Gemara is saying, that they are following this sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, that in the world of Kodesh, the Baalim have impact. The Baalim are allowed, or not allowed, but have the capacity to ruin the Korban. And that is based on a drasha of the Pasuk, as Rashi brings over here, V'kriv ha-makriv et korbano. Alma Baalim kari makriv. Because it says, V'kriv ha-makriv. Who is the one who's bringing the Korban forward to be Mukrav? That was the Baalim. And they're called a Makriv. So since they are designated as a Makriv, we learned this together, the drasha from the Gemara back in Zvachim, as to why there's another Makriv in that Pasuk. So the first Makriv is referencing to the Baalim. It's a Machloket Tanaim as to whether that is the case or not. But Rabbi Lezer Riosi is of the belief that that HaMakriv in the beginning of the Pasuk is a reference to the Baalim, and it calls them a Makriv. Why does it designate them as a Makriv? It gives them the power like someone who's doing the Avodah. If they're empowered like someone's doing the Avodah, their Makshava is going to be impactful. And that's what we're bringing over here, that Rabbi Lezer Riosi says the Baalim's Makshava is impactful in Kodesh. Just like it's impactful in Kodesh, it also is impactful in Avodah Zarah. And then the Machlok between the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer is, what's the default status? They both agree if it was articulated, it's no good. Because Machshava could impact when it comes to Avodah Zarah and Kulin. But if we don't hear anything, that's where their Machloket is. What do we think the default status is? The Tanakam says the default status is, it's fine. And Rabbi Eliezer says the default status is, Stam Machshavet Oved Kochavim, Lavodat Kochavim. But the Rabbi Yossi the Meimar, and Rabbi Yossi comes to dispel that completely and say, Apagav the Shamine de Chashiv. Even if we literally hear him say and articulate it, Zeh Mechashev, Vezeh Oved, Lo Amrinan. You're not in a world where it matters. Rabbi Yossi disagrees with Rabbi Eliezer by Rabbi Yossi and says that even within the world of Kodesh, it doesn't work. The Baalim cannot impact the Korban. Just like the Baalim can't impact the Korban, so too the owner, the Oved Kochavim over here, cannot impact the Shechita of the Chulin. So he says that your whole premise is mistaken. The fact that Baalim can be influential over here is wrong. And if Baalim can't be influential in Kodesh, they certainly can't be influential in Chulin. And therefore, even if we hear him articulating, I'm doing this for Avodah Zarah, it doesn't matter, because he's not the person doing the Shechita. He's not the one doing the action that is a religious ceremony that would then indicate that he's doing something about a zarah. That's been controlled by the Jews doing the shechita over here. Igadamre, here's a different presentation of the machloket. Bidishaminei the chashiv plige. They actually argue when it is articulated. When he says, I'm doing that about a zarah, that's where the machloket between the Tanakama and Rebbe Eliezer is. Tanakama savar, ki amrinan zeme chashiv vizilveid hanimile bifnim. When do we say that the Baalim have power to ruin the Korban or have a machshava about the Korban? That's what we're dealing in the world of Kodesh. Aval b'chutz, lo. When you're outside the Mikdash, when you're dealing with the Avodah Zarah, that's not the case. Chutz mipnim, lo yalfinan. We're not going to learn whatever paradigm happens in the Mikdash, that's not going to set the standards outside of the Mikdash. And that means that the Baalim, who have the power to be posel in the Mikdash, do not have the power to do that outside the Mikdash. And when you say zivchei mitim, it has to be that it was nizbach, lavodat kochavim. That you have to actually do the zvicha l'shem avodah zarah, and that would mean that only the person who's actually doing the shechita is the one who can be influential in that case. But the kriva makriv that says that the Baalim have influence, that's only in the world of Kodesh. You can't carry that out to avodah zarah. V'ata Rabbi Eliezer le'meimar, yofinim chutz mipnim. It's paradigmatic in nature. Whatever we do in the world of Kodesh sets the standards for avodah zarah. So if in the world of Kodesh, the Baalim can be impactful, so too they can be impactful in the world of Avodah Zarah. V'atai Rabbi Yossi the Meimar, Afilu bifnim nami zemechashev zeuved lo amrinin. And again, Rabbi Yosef comes to dispel even the premise of the whole argument, which is, even in the world of Kodesh, this does not exist. There is no such thing where the Baalim can be influential over the Korban that is being brought. It's not even in the world of Kodesh. And if it's not impactful in the world of Kodesh, it's certainly not impactful in the world of Kulin. And therefore, the Oved Kochavim of here has no influence. And if the Jew is doing the Shechita is going to be Kshera by definition, because the Jew is controlling the Makshava and the Puchan. He's the one doing, quote-unquote, the Avoda. He's the one doing the act that would have been significant, which is Shechita. And since he controls that act, the Oved Kochavim can't influence or can't imbue it with any meaning, because he's not the one doing it. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, as well as the Tanakhama, we would say that even if we hear him saying something, there's no impact over here. The machlokah between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi is only whether in the Mikdash you can have influence as Baalim, but outside the Mikdash, they both agree, according to the second version, that they have no influence. And again, that Rabbi Eliezer is the sole view that you can have influence both in the Mikdash and outside the Mikdash in the world of Avodah Zarah. Not only can you have influence outside, according to the second version, if he articulates it, or according to the first version, like Mari, even if he doesn't articulate the stam, Machshevet Oveid Kochavim, Levadat Kochavim would be influential in that case as well. Okay, we're going to stop here, 3 lines down on the top of Lamed Tet, Amud Aleph.